Hello, Radioland. This is WCOM LP Chapel Hill 103.5 Chapel Hill and Carrboro. Support for WCOM comes from the Cary Playwrights Forum. It's 9 o'clock on a Tuesday night, so it must be time for the Cary Playwrights Forum Radio Hour. I'm your host, Christian O'Neill. If you enjoy this show or any show on 103.5, you can support us by contributing safe, tax-deductible donations to WCOM online at www.wcomfm.org. Tonight we are here to entertain you with a holiday play by Laura Arwood. Laura is no stranger to the CPF Radio Hour, but this is the first time we've tricked her into coming into the studio. So tonight we have Laura Arwood in the studio along with Mia Peters to lend us their voice acting talents, and I'll be here to interrupt whenever I can. Our first offering is a short play entitled Misanthrope Under the Mistletoe, a monologue mostly. The scene opens up on a miserable office Christmas party. It's December 2008, a year of economic downturn. Diane is our misanthrope, and she is about to rant to an unsuspecting new hire. Let's listen in.
Psst, newcomer, take this drink. Pretend you're talking to me.
Okay.
Oh, God, wipe that frozen rabbit look off your face and just do what I tell you. It's like having my ex-husband in bed. Smile! It's as if we are having a pleasant conversation. Oh, God, keep your day job. I need a drink. Oh, look, I already have one. You're wondering why Diane Brent, head of accounting for Hancock Industries, is talking to the newly hired peon. Good question, because I loathe talking to idiot coworkers. Correction, I loathe talking to idiot coworkers at office parties more. Correction, I loathe talking to idiot coworkers at office Christmas parties most. You're new. It is infinitesimally, but technically possible, you might not be an idiot. As we appear to be talking, the idiot coworkers won't approach. You are my conversational beard, so look interested, will you?
Okay.
What makes my idiot coworkers think I give a tiny rat's patootie about who hooked up with who last year at the Christmas party? What Vicky does with her boy toy administrative assistant in the caterer's van is none of my beeswax, nor do I care to speculate who had the smelly bowel movement in the ladies' room last Thursday. Unless there's an office pool, then my money's on Helen! Happy holidays!
Do you think she heard?
I don't think she heard. My God, this is a pathetic excuse for a party. No hotel ballroom, no DJs, no giant shrimp. Why didn't they just call it off? In fact, as far as I'm concerned, they can just call Christmas off altogether. I didn't always hate Christmas, you know. I loved Christmas with my mother. Every year I'd give her a special ornament, like this hand-blown glass one I picked up backpacking in Innsbruck. I sacrificed part of my tiny stash of clothes to wrap it up so it didn't break. I gave up 3 pair of clean underwear. Okay, fine. 1 pair was clean. Mother loved that ornament. She was showing it off to the neighbors to impress them with her international collection. It's from Austria or Australia, whichever one is in England. Geography is not her strong suit.
Your mother really had the holiday
spirit. How could anyone have holiday spirit at this miserable excuse for a party? Especially since downsizing is driving the boss to wring twice as much work out of everyone. Most of the idiot coworkers here are incompetent in their one job. They already have. And then there's my case. They fire Bill Gillette.
Who's Bill
Gillette? Bill Gillette, the former head of IT. The idiot powers that be let him go because cutting his salary served the bottom line. Then they shove his department on my plate. Just because my ex-husband was a systems analyst. Ridiculous. Computer expertise is not a sexually transmitted disease. And forget about extra compensation, cheap SOBs. They even cut costs at this miserable excuse for a party by having a cash bar. $10 for this tiny weeny apple teeny. Outrageous! I'm down $30, which may be $10 past the point of discretion. I don't usually drink this much, but you know, 'tis the season, right? Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Who in this day and age has an office Christmas party? If you must celebrate, have a holiday party. You won't believe what our CEO Jackson said yesterday.
What did he say?
Jackson says, Diane, search every cell of your spreadsheet. Dig deep. Despite the lean year, I want to give everyone a Christmas bonus, even if it's just $20. I point out it would be more inclusive to call it a year-end bonus. The idiot looks confused, so I give him an example. Like Ben in accounts receivable. He's Jewish. Jackson says, then call it a Hanukkah handout.
Oy vey.
Jackson's title should be Chief Executive Idiot. But you know what I loathe more than idiot coworkers? Lying, greedy hypocrites. Jackson puts on a big show like he cares about his idiot employees. Give him bonuses, he says. Search a spreadsheet, he says. Dig deep, he says. Well, I dug deep. Want to know what I found?
What did you find?
What I found was anomalies. Anomalies missed by the idiots left in the department after Jackson fired all the competent ones with seniority.
Did you track the anomalies?
I tried to track the anomalies, but I couldn't get past the security levels. Apparently, my husband's sexual repertoire didn't include hacking. But I did ask Gillette to hack the company system.
I can't believe I did that.
I knew it was wrong. More importantly, I knew I could get fired. At first, all Gillette wanted to do was replace the Hancock logo with a picture of his fist holding his junk.
I get it.
Hancock? I told him puns were lame, even when they're pornographic. I told him to get on with the snooping before we got caught.
What did you find?
And what did we find? For starters, the company is in worse shape than we've been told. On January 1st, 47% of the remaining idiot coworkers are being laid off.
No, you're kidding!
But when I checked my spreadsheet twice, I found out Jackson's been naughty, not nice.
Really?
Naughty Jackson has been making irregular money transfers, none of them large enough to trigger the federal transaction inquiry. Gillette traced them to a numbered Cayman account Jackson opened in 1999.
You mean Jackson's embezzling?
Jackson's embezzling. That's the main reason Hancock Industries is bleeding money.
I can't believe it.
I couldn't believe it. I never suspected him, not once. Now who's the idiot? But I'm not idiot enough to turn him in.
Not turning him in.
Not turning him in is enlightened self-interest. I'm not one of the 47% getting laid off. And neither are you, by the way. You don't get paid enough to make a difference. If I take Jackson down for embezzling, this company goes down with him. Where would a 57-year-old female accountant find another job in this economy? But if I don't turn him in, I keep my job. I have 47% fewer idiots to put up with. Win-win. Well, at least for me. No win for 47% of the idiot coworkers. Idiot coworkers who don't deserve to be screwed over, even if they're idiots.
You're just going to do nothing?
But I couldn't do nothing. So I followed Jackson's orders to the letter. He said to use whatever money I found for the year-end bonuses. Huh. The money I found was his dirty slush fund, so that's what we used. As pissed as Gillette was, he delightfully raided Jackson's Cayman account to set up a Christmas club account in my name. After giving Gillette a cut, I wrote the bonus checks. The idiot coworkers, whose jobs are safe, had two zeros added to theirs. For the outgoing idiots, I added three.
Angela gets a shout out.
Don't shout like that. You're attracting attention, and idiot coworkers aren't big enough idiots to think that I'm scintillating.
Say, aren't you afraid of getting caught?
Not that I'm afraid of getting caught. Gillette's good at covering his tracks. He claims he's never been arrested for hacking Fort Meade in 87. Besides, he can't turn me in without implicating himself. Neither can Jackson, for that matter. I should be fine as long as no one else finds out. And nobody else will find out as long as you keep your mouth shut. And you are going to keep your mouth shut, aren't you?
I won't say a word. And that was Misanthrope Under the Mistletoe. But we're not done yet. We have another play by Laura Arwood. This one is called How I Wonder What You Are. This is also a holiday play. You can tell because of all the holiday decorations hanging around in the bar. Just close your eyes and you can see them. This next scene is about to happen right now. This next scene is about to happen right now in a local bar. Soon you'll learn about someone's interesting hobby that goes just a little too far. Just listen.
All Are you waiting for someone?
Oh, no.
Would you like to sit at the bar?
No, I want a table.
This way, please.
Oh, no, I want that table.
The one near the plant?
No, the one behind the woman typing on the computer.
Okay. Are you meeting her? I can add a chair.
No, I want to sit. I don't want to sit with her. I just want to sit behind her.
Okay. This way. Here's your menu.
No menu. Oh, wait. Yes, I will take that menu.
Okay. Here you go.
Thank you. Oh, where is my phone? Ah.
Why are you taking a picture of the menu?
I was taking a picture of that woman's... I was photographing the menu in case I wanted to order dessert later.
Okay. We have a separate dessert menu. Do you want it now?
No, I need a few minutes.
Okay.
I can't see a blessed thing on that screen. Excuse me, may I borrow the salt?
Sure. Excuse me, what are you doing with your phone?
What phone?
The one in your hand.
My hand?
Your right hand.
Oh, the phone in my right hand. Force of habit.
I didn't mean what are you doing using your right hand. I meant... Never mind.
I still didn't see anything. Oh, if I stand up, there'll be a better angle.
Why is your phone over my shoulder?
I'm taking a selfie.
Of your abdomen?
I take horrible selfies. I'll just sit back down now.
Look, you obviously want something. What is it?
What?
What do you want?
Let me see. I want an appletini.
Excuse me?
It's like a vodka martini, but it has apple schnapps in it.
I know what an appletini is, but I don't know what you think you're doing.
Ordering a drink?
From me?
You're not the bartender?
No.
I thought you were the bartender.
Why would the bartender be sitting at a table typing on a computer at the busiest time of the evening?
Maybe the bartender is an embezzler. She overhears that the boss is going to the office to audit the books. The bartender runs out from behind the bar, sits down at a table, whips out her laptop, and transfers her ill-gotten loot to an account in the Cayman Islands.
I'm not the bartender.
I know.
Now that we've established you don't want an appletini, what do you want?
Actually, I wouldn't mind an appletini. I wanted to see what you were working on.
Why?
I wanted to see what your story was.
My what?
Your story. I make up stories about people in the bar.
Why?
It got boring sitting by myself with my appletini watching other people, so I started making up stories about people in the bar. Who they are, why they're here, what they're doing.
You're joking.
No, it's fun. Go ahead. Pick someone out.
Okay. What about the group by the door?
An obnoxious group of old high school buddies. None of their significant others will tolerate them in their house, so the group meets at the bar. Pick someone else.
How about the guy at the bar? The one drinking a beer with two empties in front of him.
Let me think. He's the drummer in a Spinal Tap tribute band, and he's chugging beers because he's afraid he's going to die. Pick someone challenging.
Okay. The woman in the corner singing Soundheim while sobbing and belching.
A community theater star wannabe who's getting drunk because she didn't make the cast of Into the Woods.
Okay, there is no way my story could be more interesting than that.
Your story is so much more interesting. Plus, I've known you the longest.
You've known me 3 minutes.
I've known you for 3 months?
You're kidding. Well, now you have me curious. Sit down.
Aren't you afraid I might be a stalker?
Perhaps, but as the saying goes, I keep my friends close, but my enemies closer. Either way, have a seat.
Yeah.
I'm Claire Austin.
I'm Max Hoffman.
So, Max Hoffman, what's your story?
Oh, I've never made up a story for myself.
Actually, I'd prefer the truth.
a story would be less pathetic.
Pathetic is fine.
Not from my perspective.
Perhaps you'll indulge my curiosity anyway.
Last February, my company transferred me here from the Danbury office. My job is to bring a new accounting system online. I was so excited about my promotion. I thought, I'll be working with people, not just numbers. I'll use my big fat raise to get a nice apartment. I'll have a winter commute that doesn't involve sled dogs. It was supposed to be wonderful.
But it's not wonderful?
No. The promotion is a name only. There's no raise. I still work in a cubicle. My coworkers hate me because they hate learning the new system. My apartment complex is filled with introverts. And the no pets policy means I can't even have sled dogs.
That doesn't sound wonderful.
I got tired of being hated by day and lonely by night, so I started coming here just to be around non-hostile people who don't hide behind doors. And I'm too shy to actually talk to anyone. So I make up stories instead.
What made you graduate from storytelling to stalking?
Making up a story for you has been difficult. Interesting, but difficult.
All I do is sit at a table.
That's not all. You sat at a table alone in a bar once a week for 3 months typing on a laptop. Nothing I was coming up with worked. I was honing in on a scenario where you're the next J.K. Rowling, but last week, my Harry Potter plot, Evanesco, disappeared. Because Akio, that woman appeared.
That woman?
Her scarf hid her hair color, but she seemed to be...
I know what woman you mean.
I thought she could be your literary agent. Until I overheard her speak with a Russian accent. Then I thought, foreign espionage agents.
Russian spies, as in Musk, Moose, and Squirrel?
No, really. You spoke together so quietly, so seriously. And right before she left, you squeezed her hand.
How does that say spy to you?
You spoke quietly because you didn't want to be overheard. You were serious because... spying is serious business. You squeezed her hand because you were passing her a USB drive with secret plans.
That is some story. All the parts seem to fit.
But that's just it. The parts fit too well. The more I thought about it, the more plausible it got. That's when I knew I had to do something.
What was your plan? Call the cops?
Of course not. You would have erased the evidence long before the local yokels could make a move.
Cops didn't believe you when you called the precinct, did they?
No, they did not. So I decided to get proof by taking pictures of your computer screen.
But I caught you in the act.
Yeah.
What would you have done if I was a Russian spy?
I would have placed you under citizen's arrest.
You came prepared to arrest me?
Yep.
Are those handcuffs?
Yep.
Wrapped in pink fake fur?
Yep.
Oh, Lord. Actually, there's another story that fits. Would you like to hear it?
No.
Are you sure?
No.
Do you mind if I tell you anyway?
No.
Thank you. There's a Slavic studies professor from Chapel Hill, me, who teaches a course on Tolstoy at NC State one night a week this semester.
Which began 3 months ago.
Yes. The professor hates fighting the rush hour traffic on 40, so she comes early and reviews her lectures at a bar.
Sitting alone at a table.
Yes. A month ago, the professor, me, gets an email from a colleague she met on sabbatical in St. Petersburg.
The woman in the scarf.
Yes. The colleague is going to be in the area in December and wants to meet. The professor suggests the colleague come to the bar.
Last week.
The colleague wants the professor to help her stay in the United States. She wants the professor to help her apply for an I-130 visa.
A what?
A visa for a foreign-born spouse.
Spouse? But she... you...
Same-sex spouses of U.S. citizens can get green cards now.
That does call for a quiet, serious conversation followed by a hand squeeze.
Yes, her request has so many ramifications.
Wow. This is better than the Russian spy story. A Victorian romance novel with a marriage of convenience.
Oh, there's nothing convenient about it. Natasha says she's in love with me. I want to help her, but...
But you're not on her team.
Oh, no. I'm on her team. At least I was in St. Petersburg.
Then what's the problem?
I'm not sure I'm ready to play ball in North Carolina.
Do you love her?
Yes, but it's complicated. We're meeting here today, and I'm supposed to give her my answer.
If you love her, your story should turn out fine. Unless it's a Russian novel. Then everyone dies.
Look, there's Natasha now.
Oh, I better get out of here. I hope your story has a happy ending.
Claire.
Natasha, my darling.
Claire?
Oh, Claire kissed her. It isn't a Russian novel. Congratulations. Bye, Claire.
Thank you, Max Hoffman. Goodbye.
Is he gone?
Yes.
Did you get the plans?
Yes.
Good work. Is it safe to hand over the drive?
Yes. Squeeze my hand.
And that was How I Wonder What You Are, another play by Laura Arwood. Starring tonight's shows were Mia Peters and Laura Arwood as our special guest voices.
And you.
And Christian.
Yes, and me. I was also in there for a little while. Thank you, Laura, for bringing these plays to my attention. I like doing your plays over the year.
Oh,
they're
thank
very
you.
Fun to do. And we were discussing before the show that these plays have things that are very much in common. There's strings of like Appletinis, Cayman Islands, and did you want to talk about that a little bit more?
Actually, I never realized how much these had in common until you did them back to back, and I'm sitting here going, oh my God, they're like the same play. It's like there's embezzling stories in both of them. There's Appletinis in both of them. They literally were written 3 years apart, though. So I swear to God, I didn't just sit down one night with an Appletini and knock these out.
Played Appletini Mad Libs. You just changed the situation, but it's the same words and everything.
Actually, I just was, like I said, I was just laughing over the fact that I used the embezzling. Actually, I wrote Misanthrope in 2014, and I wrote How I Wonder in 2017, and I literally, you know, didn't remember how similar some of the pieces were when I pulled from Misanthrope to put into Wonder. I don't think I ever realized the two would be done back to back. So I'm caught. You caught me. I used the same material.
You heard it here, folks. We caught her live. This is what the CPF Radio Hour is for.
Yeah. I do want to thank you, too, very much. I so enjoy CPF Radio Hour. It's done very well by my plays, and y'all, too, did it again tonight. Totally enjoyed this very much.
Well, thank you. It was super fun. I have enjoyed playing both of these parts.
Yeah. Well, Misanthrope's my baby, so you did real good.
Oh, yay!
When I emailed Laura and I was like, is there anyone that you want me to get? She says, find the crankiest woman you can find.
And it's me!
I said, the best crankiest woman.
The best crankiest woman. That's okay. I mean, I may have, you know, started typecasting you in my shows, too. So.
Well, there's true. I didn't say if there was a comma between best and crankiest. No, seriously, though.
Thank you. No, cranky's fun. I like playing cranky.
Yeah. Cranky is fun.
So where did Misanthrope came about as a idea for you?
Actually, the Misanthrope was part of a fundraiser for Altree Theater, which was Jesse Lowe's production company.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. I started my playwriting career by taking a playwriting class with Jesse Lowe. And that was in January of 2014. And later that year, he asked me to participate in his fundraiser. And his fundraiser, the idea of it was an awful Christmas party. And he asked a group of us to write monologues of different people who would be at the Christmas party. And that was all he said. And so this is what came out.
So with these other monologues, it would be happening at the same Christmas party at the same time?
Right. And so he actually ended up using this scenario as a kind of a – he incorporated the other ones into it, you know, kind of to – so he was handing out Christmas bonuses and stuff amongst the – you know, so he used it to kind of frame all of the monologues. But even though it was used for Jesse's, it was also I sent it off to a submission call by Hobo Junction in Chicago, and it was picked up there the same year. So they did it in their Christmas festival in Chicago. And I got to go see it through the auspices of Cary Playwrights Forum and also the generosity of the theater community. Kurt Benrood and Phil Lewis started a
fundraiser
for me to send me out there because I'm a poor person. My sister kicked in a plane ticket, and off I went and got to see it performed
really
in Chicago. It was, actually it was funny because when I told the director and the woman who performed it, they were like, "It's a Christmas miracle." So she's like, "You ought to write a play about that." And I said, "No one would believe it."
No, but that there is something to be said about the theater community in this area. And I don't just mean Carrboro Chapel Hill. I just mean in the Triangle in general. They are – it's a small world. And instead of being ways that we – you know, unpleasant ways towards each other, we seem to be very supportive and – take care of our own.
Incredibly supportive. I mean, I know I found it so, and I suppose y'all, I hope y'all have too.
Yeah. No, it's all supportive people.
Yeah, except that Christian. No.
Except me.
Except that cranky Mia. She's just the worst.
Yeah. I'm the misanthrope she's talking about.
Yeah. No one's the misanthrope. A couple of people have played the misanthrope, but no one's the misanthrope. No, it's an incredibly beautiful community. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so, but anyway, so that's kind of the history with misanthrope. That's how it came about. Although it does have, I always put a little bit of real anecdotes in there. And the story about her giving her mother an ornament from Innsbruck was true. I used to give my mother ornaments every year, and literally I gave my mother one from Innsbruck, and she literally told a neighbor it was from Austria or Australia, whichever was in England. That literally happened.
I was about to ask if she had the knack for geography.
Absolutely not.
And that's where comedy comes from.
And love.
And love. Comedy and love.
Yeah.
And you were talking about Small World. Mia and Laura were working together with the infamous play that was...
The play that wasn't.
The play that wasn't.
But before that, in January of last year, she was also... she played a very cranky older woman in the play that wasn't. But she also played a very cranky British older lady in, and then there were none that I directed in Holly Springs last January. So apparently that's our thing. We're just going to keep playing cranky older women for each other for the rest of ever.
Well, and I also met Christian playing an older cranky English lady.
Oh, in Mousetrap.
In Mousetrap. Yeah, Mousetrap. Mm-hmm. So I only, the last five roles I have played.
Well, then there were Silver Linings.
There was Silver Lining, and I also did the Carrie Ghost Walk.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently I only play a cranky, and I was a cranky ghost in the Ghost Walk. So apparently I only play cranky dead women. So, you know. And
when you find your niche, you find your
niche. You stick with it.
Yeah.
If you've got something that works, you know.
It works. You're great at it.
Yeah. Well, I can't wait for you to direct something else so I can audition. So.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
You just keep on writing.
Well, there's a lot of, actually, in addition to the talent pool in this area is incredible, but also not only in acting, which is an embarrassment of riches, the playwriting community is amazing, getting better and bigger mm-hmm. all the time, which is wonderful. And the play, I mean, you write plays as well.
Yeah.
And isn't it amazing how supportive also the playwriting community is?
Yeah, there's a lot of different ways for, like, Sonorous Row does the 10 by, or no, not the 10 by 10, but the
Open Doors
series. Yeah, and then the 10 by 10, and of course, Carrie Playwrights Forum does the, it was revived, the 10 by 10 along with the Carborough.
Odyssey Stage.
Odyssey Stage. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the Play Slams and...
Yeah, yeah.
And you're doing one.
And Yvette's doing Sips and Scripts. And
Sips and Scripts, I was about to mention. Yeah, Yvette Holder and Kurt Benrud run that. And there's a lot of stuff going on, a lot of new playwrights that are in the area, and they're getting exposure.
Mm-hmm. And people help each other. I mean, it's really, people are very encouraging to each other. You can always pick up the phone and find somebody to give you feedback and, you know, get together in your living rooms and do, you know, beta reads on your plays. And it's just amazing, you know, how supportive the community is in all ways.
Well, and you have the contest that's running right now, don't you?
Yes, we're currently looking at our first ever radio play contest for Carrie Playwrights Forum. And we're going to have everything will be performed live on the air. We'll pick our top five contenders to run for the contest, and we're going to have voice acting auditions. I think it'll be the first big voice acting auditions that have been in the area for local stage actors, I guess. But there should be a big turnout because there's not a whole lot of voice acting opportunities strictly. They come up here and there, and usually it's like a one-off role for they're doing like a medical mm-hmm. procedure, like showing you how to do something. So,
yeah.
Laura got excited.
Yeah. Well, we have a colleague who was doing
He's the best. This is just a fun story. Craig Ashby, he was a fan of theater in Holly Springs. He came out to see a bunch of shows, and he happened to be at the mayoral debate. And we were running auditions for, and then there were none, and somebody kind of pushed him into coming in. He's in his, he was in the late 60s, and he's from Scotland, never been in a play in his entire life, and he decided to read, and he was instantly and perfectly the general for, and then there were none. And so now that's what he does. He does those the voiceovers and the acting for the medical videos. It's the best thing ever.
That's why I got excited.
That's funny.
Yeah, we know someone who does.
That's what he does.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it's going to be exciting because with some of these, we have really good entries where they really got into the spirit of like a radio serial kind of drama player. And you know, we have spoofs, we have different genres of different things. So it'll be fun to see how many voices we can get out of one actor to play, you know, different roles. And, that's going to be fun to do.
I think it's going to be interesting. I'll tell you this, it is harder. It's different to write for radio because not so much Misanthrope, but How I Wonder, both of these were written to be stage plays, obviously. Misanthrope is basically a monologue, and so it could stand on its own, basically, either place. But How I Wonder was written as a, stage play. And when I was adapting it for radio, I had to invent a whole new character. The character of the server wasn't in there at all, and... a lot of what happened between the character of the server and Max happened visually. It was all, it happened visually on the stage. And then everything that happened and Natasha was a non-speaking role, because everything that happened between Natasha and, Claire at the end about the spine and stuff and the passing of the USB drive, all of that happened visually. And not a word was spoken. And so I'm like sitting there when I was asked, to submit to the radio hour, I was like, wonder how I'm going to be doing that. and it was really interesting to adapt.
Yeah, it's tricky. You have to be very deliberate, almost like, you know, you sometimes have to have characters saying stuff that they wouldn't normally say in real life, like, hey, you're reaching into your bag. Like,
yes. The selfie was funny because she actually took a selfie on, you know, it was like she was trying to like, you know, one of the characters turns around and sees she's got the phone in her hand, and then all of a sudden she reaches up and you see her taking a selfie, and I'm like going, how do you turn that into verbal? Right. And that was when I had the thing about taking the selfie of your abdomen. And also the pink, the furry handcuffs. On stage, the woman whipped out a hat that had FBI on it. And it just didn't translate here, but I thought pink furry handcuffs might. So, you know, you always, pink furry handcuffs are never wrong.
No, never. And we also had the conversation about, because the reason you keep saying she is that originally, the way that it's written, it's Maggie, not
Maggie
Max.
Hoffman,
So we had to have a conversation about, like, how creepy would it be that this was a guy who was stalking her with pink furry handcuffs versus, you know, a woman that was doing it.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because I did... You know, Christian had to remind me, originally when I wrote it, I did write it as gender-neutral roles, that it could be gender-flipped. But the couple of times that it's been staged, they've always had it as Maggie and Claire, you know, the two female characters. And tonight, for the first time, I got to see it, you know, one of the characters gender-flipped. And so, Christian, you did such a great job with that.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, and it was so fun to see the dynamic because it did change it. Like you said, you did such a nice job of not making it too creepy.
Yeah.
I strive for not being creepy.
That's not what I hear.
Well, yeah, but it's all about, you know, tone and how you said the lines, because you could have completely come off like super creepster.
Yeah, especially as this is the first thing yet you see a Max Hoffman doing is, you know, he wants to sit specifically close to a woman and take weird pictures while she's not looking.
Yeah. I also want to say that I am so impressed with your ability to do all of the Foley table stuff while reading the script and staying in character.
Yes.
I mean, bravo. That was...
I'm frustrated with my chair scraping. It's a... It worked at one point. We did bar plays. I don't know if you were okay. Yeah, we did a bar plays segment that Sean Malone helped set up, and this worked so nicely. It was a, I think it was a preview before bar plays were like they were getting bar plays. But anyway, this worked at one point. It's a cat dish holder. On a
wrought iron one at that.
Yes, yeah. A wrought iron one to get the steel sound on wood. And I have a wood board that's I shouldn't be messing up because it's a thing that you use for art and I don't remember what it's for. But
oops.
Yeah.
Oops.
But I don't get the sound out anymore. Yeah.
Oh well.
I was very proud of myself when I figured it out. I was like, I don't have to have an actual stool to do this. But no, it doesn't make the sound anyway. But anyway. I'll fix it in post production.
That'll be the loudest chair scrape ever.
Yeah.
I'll make people cringe as they're listening to it. Like nails on a chalkboard.
Yeah.
But they will hear it.
Aren't you glad you're listening live?
Oh, no, this will be edited out.
Yeah. Yeah. I can always turn down my hearing aids, so yeah, scrape away.
Yeah. So this is wrapping up towards the end of the year. It's going to be Christmas next Tuesday, next week. What have been the highlights for both of you this past year? Looking back, reminiscing.
Oh, wow.
The play that didn't happen. For those of you who don't know, the play that didn't happen that we were referring to later was Drop Dead, which was at Stageworks at Holly Springs, which unfortunately, due to a hurricane that kind of sort of came through, they were able to have one performance during preview night, and the I forget, it's the cultural center mm-hmm. at Holly Springs.
Yeah.
The government had to close that down, and they were not able to do any of their one weekend run.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
You know, it was funny because you were saying, like, what were our, you know, highlights on it. And I have to say, one of my highlights was that show.
Yeah, a lot of the people that I talked to said they really enjoyed being in the show and just being around each other and the script.
It was a great script. God, it's so funny.
It was a very funny script, and it was a very funny cast. Myself excluded.
No, she was brilliant.
It was a great cast. Wonderful director. And it was just it was a great chemistry. And I have to say, it was a highlight for me because it was one of the most favorite characters I've ever played. And I had so much fun playing that character. And you were talking about...
You just loved busting through a wall like the Kool-Aid Man.
Yes, I liked that. And I liked using the Rollator.
That was awesome.
But the thing that was fun about that play was, you know, you were talking about with the voice characters having to play multiple voices. In that play, a lot of us had roles where we had to play an actor on stage, and it was a play within a play.
Yeah.
So we had to play two characters. We had to play an actor, and an actor being a character.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to be an actor playing a character badly. Yeah. And so we had to try and be good when we weren't being bad. So that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, we actually one night at rehearsal sat down and made a list of all of the pet peeves that we have when we go to see plays or we watch, you know, anything on TV or whatever, all the bad acting mistakes, the things that drive us nuts, so that we could make sure that every single one of them was in there. Because when the bad acting was happening, it was awful. Yeah. It was so great.
Maybe you should convince Holly Spring to do an encore setting with a proper run.
Maybe. I don't know. They have a bunch of other great shows. They've got one coming up in January, and then they've got Girls of Garden Club in January, and then later in the year,
Death Trap is coming,
Harold and Maude, which is just a fabulous. I mean, I really like that show. So, and then they're doing Greater Tuna, so they're really packed, and they do a ton of kids theater stuff there as well. So, but you know, give it a couple years, and I might pitch it somewhere else.
Yeah.
So do a reunion show.
Yeah, and I got the role later. My sister put it in her attic, so you know I'll be auditioning again if you do. But that character was definitely a highlight for me. The play, the people, but just getting to know that character was a definite highlight.
Oh gosh, well I haven't before January. I had not directed adults before. I had done kids shows, I had done teen shows, stuff at church, but I had not directed adults. And so, and then there were none, which also happens to be one of my favorite books by Agatha Christie. That was huge. And then follow it up by, I did some fun acting stuff over the summer with 10 by 10. And then, John Paul with Odyssey had asked Michael and I to come back and relive one of those for another show that he did, and yours as well. The Merrily We Roll Along is not the name of the one, but that's what it makes me think of. Rock the Boat, that's it, was also in it. So it's been a very fun year for me. A lot of changes in my life, and it was fun. But I Drop Dead was probably the scariest thing I've done because it was just so technical. And not having – if bad acting is not done really, really well, it's bad acting. And yes, that's not funny. So to pull that off and as well as we did and you know, it was a preview night. We weren't completely ready to go. But as well as it turned out, I couldn't be more proud of my people. The cast was just wonderful. So Next year directing, if I direct anything next year, it's going to have big shoes to fill.
Well, it's funny because you're mentioning and then there were none. That was in January, and that almost doesn't even seem like this past year.
No.
But and then there were none was Perfection. I mean, that was...
I happen to believe it was Perfection. I mean, my own self.
I mean, I don't mean my role in it, but that came together beautifully. And the fact you got to do both endings.
Oh yeah, that was super fun. And what I loved, I loved the people. I loved the opportunity. For me, the best part about And Then There Were None was that we got to go to Fuquay Varina Middle School and perform it for the eighth graders. A friend of mine, Lisa Ricci, is in charge of the English department there for the eighth graders. And Then There Were None as required reading for them. So they had read the book, and the book ending is different than the ending that we showed them. But a lot of those kids have never seen live theater before. It's just not in the realm that the reality that they live in. So the raw responses to seeing that show and things that happened, and you know, there's a prop gun that gets pulled out, and the reacting to mm-hmm. a gun, and cultural things when. Vera is hyperventilating and Lombard's character slaps her in the face. Well, I thought there was going to be a mutiny. I mean, people stood up in their chairs. I thought poor Michael Parker was going to get killed on the stage for slapping a woman. I mean, their reaction when it's revealed who the killer really is, I love teens. I worked with them for almost a decade. They are just my favorite people. And to watch middle schoolers see something the first time and just that the raw reaction, no etiquette because they don't know any better, just amazing, jumping out of their seats. And it was just the most, I don't know that anything in theater will ever top that.
It was so cool. They were cheering and fell in love with the hero, you know, Michael Parker, and they all loved Noelle because she
hated Gus. Gus.
Oh, they booed me.
They booed you. They booed you, and they booed Gus.
Yeah, we were the villains, you know. So, I mean, it was fabulous. It was, you know, and they were, you know, they were, yeah. But
would theatrically be the highlight of my year was that performance, and we were so exhausted. We did, I don't know, 6 shows in 3 days. I mean, 72 hours. It was just, which, you know, I know a lot of people do that, but we also had real jobs that we were also working at full time. And it was just, but that was the cool, that's definitely the highlight of my year.
It was an amazing production.
But yeah, our middle schoolers with no, you know, we still, the sofa that we used in the play was from the janitor's closet. I mean, it just, there was no set, half the props. It was just, but they just went with us. And it was just, that will probably be the best theater moment I have ever had. Taylor Nichols ran sound for us from the sound booth, but she could not hear anything because the sound was not connected from the stage to the sound booth. So she was reading lips of the people on stage to do this, all the sound cues and light cues, and she nailed them. Yeah. We had her on Tina Early was in the backstage on her cell phone. I'm on my cell phone off to stage left. And we're like texting her and on the phone to try to tell her when to do stuff in case she couldn't see it. It was a recipe for disaster. And yet it was the coolest thing I've ever done.
Yeah.
So what was yours? Top that, Christian.
I can't top middle schoolers cheering at something I directed. But my highlight of the year was working with Sonorous Road on Edgar Allan Poe's Strange City, which was an immersive theater experience. That was really fun to do. Getting to make a immersive theater experience where people can explore this world, that's something that I've always wanted to do, is just to immerse people somewhere.
It's kind of the same. I mean, it's kind of the same.
Yeah. You have to just give it, you know, all four, three, four dimensions, because we put sights, sounds, smells in there, and
That first room was creepier than crap. Sorry.
Yeah,
had to throw that in there.
Yeah, and so I'm hoping that I can be a part of it next year because we only want it to grow and because there's a lot of Poe.
Yeah, you had me at Poe. You had me at Poe.
We just scratched the surface, and I want to put in different special effects and illusions and stuff like that in there because there's not a whole lot of space in Sonorous Road, but there's still lots of blank walls and some dead areas where we could that weren't intended to be dead, we could, plus it a little bit more. So that was my highlight was just to just because I sat in the lobby usually and I would watch people's reactions. Coming on, they just all had smiles on their faces, and Michael Bacigalupo,
Bacigalupas, yeah, him,
Bacigal, yeah. He said he walked around as like a guard, and he played I forgot the character's name. He played Hopfrog the Jester,
yeah,
and he would come up to me as I was walking around inside there. He's like, "There are Poe fans here." And they don't want to leave. They just want to look at everything.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm so happy because I try to make it to where like everyone can look at it, but especially the Poe fans will have like something they could appreciate everywhere.
So. It was wonderful. I attended it this year and it was absolutely wonderful. You did a great job. And if you plan to grow it, can't imagine what it'll be like again. Yeah. But that first room was very creepy.
Yeah, we're... I felt like we were on a time crunch, so me and the cast, especially the cast, were great to work with. They were all great artists and designers, so like the reason the graveyard and these other places.
I was going to say the gravestones were wonderful.
That was Kimmy Fiorentino. Like she made all those gravestones by hand, and
she is ridiculously talented in so many areas of performance art and. Actual like art and painting and creating. I mean, I don't know. I want to be like Kimmy when I grow up.
And then like a lot of other artwork was done by Leah Fitzgerald. Like there was graffiti with like there was like a black cat alley and like the black cat figures that were on the wall and like the balloon, the hot air balloon.
Oh, I liked all the writing and that
was a lot of her designs and if we did not have that cast, it would not have looked nearly as good as it did. So I'm happy that we have the right cast and that we were able to put it on. And I'm hoping to make the cast a little bit bigger next year. And
I want to audition for it. I actually wasn't able to audition for it this year. I'm a huge Poe fan.
Yeah.
And I was like,
we weren't able to audition for it because we were busy doing the play that did not happen.
I know. I would not have given it up. I would not have given it up. But anyway, there was another reason. There was another reason, too.
That was my reason.
But anyway, that was wonderful, Kristen. That was really wonderful.
Well, thank you. I do actually have to wrap up before the other show comes there and here, and I have to clean up all my sound effects. But I do want to thank you both for dropping by. And
thank you for doing the plays.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And this has been the Cary Playwrights Forum Radio Hour. I'm your host, Christian O'Neill. Good night and break a leg.